That is really great advice. Like, as you were explaining that, I was like thinking through situations in my head. Like, yeah, I would totally resonate with the way that you responded.
Yeah.
As opposed to my sort of default, which is like, pardon my French, but you're
Exactly. Which is what we want to do. Or, you know, your partner walks through the door and says, you know, I had the worst day. And your response is, oh, you think your day was bad? Wait till you hear about my day. And then dinner is not going to be fun.
Welcome to the Mostly Money Podcast with your host, Preet Banerjee.
Just a quick programming note, this episode does contain some profanity, and unlike the intro, it's not bleeped out from here. Listener discretion is advised. This is Mostly Money, and I'm your host, Preet Banerjee, and on the show today, I'm speaking with New York Times best-selling author Dr. Leanne Davey about how to fight with your financial advisor productively. Yes, conflict can be a good thing. And without further ado, let me introduce my friend Leanne. Dr. Leanne Davey is, as I said, the New York Times best-selling author of You First, Inspire Your Team to Grow Up, Get Along, and Get Stuff Done. She's a regular contributor to the Harvard Business Review and an organizational psychology expert for Quartz magazine. And as the founder of, how do I pronounce this? Three Co's?
Yep.
Three Co's. Perfect. As the co-founder of Three Co's Inc., she advises on business strategy and executive team effectiveness and has worked with executives at companies such as Amazon, Walmart, Aviva, TD Bank, 3M, and Sony PlayStation. Leanne has a PhD in organizational psychology and has served as an evaluator for the American Psychological Association's Healthy Workplace Awards. Her new book, The Good Fight, Use Productive Conflict to Get Your Team and Your Organization Back on Track, will be released in winter 2019. Leanne, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Preet. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you could join me after, you know, spending your morning looking at dead people. Or something like that.
Isn't that it?
You live like right over a cemetery?
I do. I live over one of the most gorgeous cemeteries in the country. Some of the most famous people in Canadian history are buried in my backyard, and they make excellent neighbors.
Do you know who the most famous person is, or a famous person that's in there?
Mackenzie King. So we got a prime minister.
Yeah.
The Tory family, for Torontonians will know the Tory family well. But my favorite gravestone is famous defense attorney Eddie Greenspan.
Oh, yeah.
And his gravestone simply says, Eddie Greenspan, the defense rests.
Oh,
and I think that's just fitting. It's perfect.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That's my favorite one.
Do you, I know some people, I think a friend of ours from the speaking group recently posted a picture of a cemetery and how they like to spend time there. I know there are a lot of people who find it very peaceful, calm, maybe sometimes cathartic to just sort of hang out in cemeteries. You ever do that?
I don't hang out there, but I will go through it as often as I can. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the great things about city living is I can get to a lot of client meetings on my feet.
Right.
And the B line from my place to the subway line or from my place to the main street is right through the cemetery. Mm. And it is absolutely one of the most beautiful places to walk. So walking is great there. Plus, when you are raising kids in the middle of the city, great place to learn to ride a bike. So we do use it as an extended backyard.
Right.
I don't go chillax there or anything, but you know, now, I do love it.
Now, are there people who sort of get upset when people use a cemetery as a park? Like, personally, I would think it's fine, but I know that there must be some people that are like, hey, why are you riding a bike through a cemetery? Do you ever run into conflict?
Oh, good one. So you know what? I never have run into conflict. The cemetery group does a really good job of saying what's cool and what's not cool.
Oh.
So for some reason we have demonized rollerblades. So mm-hmm. It's okay to be on a bike with the big, big wheels,
right,
but not on rollerblades with small, small wheels.
Totally makes sense.
So somehow that's disrespectful. You can have your dog, but you know, they prefer if your dog not urinate on people's gravestones. Makes sense.
Sure.
And you know what? The people who use it really do treat it well. So it's not one of the places that I've seen a lot of conflict. One of the few places in the city that's probably fairly safe from conflict.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue into why you're here to talk about your book and also conflict in general, how we can have productive conflict. So let me start with this one question. This is something that has been said about Canadians, because I want to take the sort of perspective of financial consumers and specifically the situation of dealing with financial advisors. People say that Canadians are somewhat apathetic. They are conflict averse. Why are people in general so wary of conflict?
It comes from a few places. So first of all, we've evolved to be conflict averse, at least with people who are in our tribe, in our in-group. And why? Because you didn't want to get voted out of the cave and eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, right? It made a lot of sense that you wanted to get along with the people who are in your group. So that makes perfect sense. Unfortunately, as humans, not so good if you're from the cave next door. But but if we're in a tribe, and then we're socialized to see conflict as impolite. So my grandmother used to say to me, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. And actually, if you want the Canadian spin on that, what it actually was if you can't say anything nice, wait until we're in the car, which is a very Canadian version of it. So we're biologically wired to be conflict averse with people who are in our in-group. And then we're socialized at home from childhood to not say things that aren't nice, to mind our own business, to, you know, go along to get along. So there's a lot of reasons why we end up as adults. And it's such a crazy situation. It's our freaking money.
Right.
And somehow we're like, oh, I know it's my money, but, you know, my financial advisor's the boss. And particularly with people who we hold in power over us, like physicians or financial advisors or lawyers, we think they know better. And so we don't challenge them. So huge problem. We got to fix it, Preet. We got some time today. We got to fix that.
Right. Now, you know, you mentioned that the Canadian thing would be to, if you can't say something nice, wait till you get into the car. What about hockey players? Like, they drop the gloves at any sign of, you know, oh, this guy, you know, checked their goalie or whatever. I'm not, clearly not a big hockey watcher, but whatever would piss off a hockey player, they'll drop the gloves. So from that Canadian perspective,
yeah
we fight.
That's a good point. Maybe it's like, if you can't say something nice, wait till we're on the rink. Like
maybe
that's our one,
but maybe
exception.
That's productive conflict in a way. I'm not condoning violence. I'm just saying.
Except in gold medal matches where it's totally awesome.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we are wary of conflict, but conflict can be a good thing. And you mentioned, and we both mentioned, you know, dealing with financial advisors. And I think when it comes to getting good value for what you're paying for advice, whether it be financial advice or other, if you're just going to pay and just take the advice, that might work for some people if you want to completely delegate. But I don't think most relationships fall under that situation. I think there's a lot of people where they could actually get more value if they were a bit more collaborative, but functionally collaborative. So I'm not just saying, you know, volunteering information. I'm saying challenging, and having this back and forth to really get at whether it's a better understanding of someone's true goals, because sometimes you have to peel back a few layers before you figure out what really people want. And also holding whoever's giving you advice to account, making sure that you're getting good value, et cetera. So I think there is value. I don't think that if you're upset, you should just walk away. It may be productive to have conflict. So what is the risk of avoiding conflict with your financial advisor or, you know, members of your family or what have you?
Yeah. So there's sort of upside and downside. So if we take an upside that you lose, it's just the chance to really push and try new things and be innovative, right? So it may be that your financial advisor has got you on a path that's a little more conservative. And you're at a time in your life, you've got financial goals that mean you can push a little harder than maybe his or her other clients are. And so if you're not being willing to say, hey, you know, dial it up a bit for a little while, or I got some money here that I don't mind losing or risking, and let's do something exciting with it. So there's upside potential. More innovation can come if you're willing to really clash a little bit and push. But the other side, of course, is making sure the downside is there. So making sure your advisor knows that, you know, she's pushing you too hard. And yeah, it's great that you're getting that tension to come on a little more, give up the Starbucks. And if it's just giving up a Starbucks to have an extra $500, you know, every month, great. But if it's giving up something that actually means something to you, you know, my daughter's in grade 11 right now. I got one more year with her at home. And if giving up a family vacation this year might not be the right call for me. My RSP can wait till, you know, I've really milked the time with her, got that college fund all set up. You know, the retirement savings can wait. So it's important that I be able to say, hey, there's a downside of you pushing me to do more and more. And those kinds of things are so important in an advisory relationship, pushing them to make sure you get all the upside that's possible, but also that they understand that there could be a downside and they can't know that without you telling them.
Yeah, I think when it comes to financial advice, the areas that people get upset with or take issue with, particularly, one of the big ones is when the markets are going down. So there's often a disconnect between the meeting that you have with an advisor and they walk you through, here's what you can expect, here's what the markets have done. You know, we're picking a portfolio that is prudent for your situation, goals, time horizon, all that stuff. And they'll say, listen, it can go down. And sometimes, oftentimes, clients may not remember the nuance of that conversation when the market does in fact go down. It's a very emotional thing, right?
Yeah.
When you actually see the dollar value in your account go down, it can drive you to say, all right, I need to speak to my advisor, or I need to walk away because I'm unhappy with them and I haven't talked to them about it. And this is actually where there's a lot of problem, because some people, instead of saying, hey, let's talk about this, they may just become dissatisfied and keep it to themselves. And over time, they'll just find someone else or move their money away or whatever. And that may not have been an optimal choice. The flip side is that sometimes there are a lot of financial advisors who are afraid to pick up the phone to call their clients when the markets are going down, knowing full well that this is the emotional response that a lot of people have. That's probably the most important time to have communication. So whether it's you thinking about talking to your advisor, or you as an advisor thinking about talking to your client, when the markets are going down, it's important to have communication. And this may lead to conflict, but that could be a good thing, right?
That's the healthy kind of conflict, right? Conflict that's sort of proactive, that's, you know, nipping it in the bud. So one of the terms that I write about in The Good Fight, which I think you'll relate to, is I talk about the fact that we're all getting into conflict debt. So much like commercial debt, you know, financial debt we get into, there's something that you need and you can't afford it, so you just put it on your card. Mm-hmm. You promise yourself that the first paycheck that comes in, I'm paying it off.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, because there's always some kind of an unanticipated expense. And so it builds up and then you pay the interest and then the interest compounds and suddenly you're kind of debilitated by this debt. So it turns out the same thing happens with conflict. There's a situation like, oh shit, I just saw the markets are going down. I don't want my clients to find out. So you're like, I'll tell them later. Maybe it'll turn around this month before they get a statement and right?
Yeah.
And it's just that same Visa sound in your head, right? Of like, oh shit, you just put that onto your conflict debt. So what I'm trying to do is, just like you would encourage, I'm trying to get people to come up to these conflicts and pay them in cash, which is just, I'm going to pick up the phone right now while I can still afford this, where it can be, look, I want to let you know there's, you know, Donald Trump said some other fucking ridiculous thing yesterday. Markets are down again. Well, if you think about Christmas Eve and Boxing Day in 2018, right? They're like, and we're down and we're up,
right?
That may be one where a day's worth of conflict debt would have helped you out, saved you a call. But, yeah. But it's really important to actually have that quick conversation. Say, I just want to let you know, this is only a week, or this is only whatever, it may not even show up on your month, on your monthly statement. I just want you to know, this is what's happening. This is, you know, here's the benefit of the markets being down. The units we're buying while the markets are down are cheaper. In the end, it's all good. Your time horizon is X. But if you have that conversation, what we're looking for is to keep conflict high frequency, people are like, you mean I'm supposed to have more conflict? And the answer is yes.
Let's fight.
But when you have higher conflict, higher frequency, it's lower impact.
Right.
It's just little tiny uncomfortable conversations, as opposed to I didn't say anything and they've got a quarterly statement that shows them in the red in a big way.
Right.
And that's going to be a really bad conversation because you let the client be surprised. So the personal call needs to come before the statement and it needs to come with a tone that says, this is okay. This is normal. This is how it works. Markets go in two directions. I just wanted you to know this because of course that's going to increase your trust in your advisor. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel like this is a guy who's going to let me know if there's something that I need to worry about. And you know, that trust in your advisor is what you're paying for really.
Right. Yeah. And as I said, that is where I think a lot of the faith in that relationship can break down if there isn't proper communication. And so I really like that idea of, you know, high frequency conflict. Mm-hmm. I think conflict doesn't have to be a bad word. Right?
No, I think I'm trying to reclaim it. Like we've reclaimed so many other words, right? I'm trying to get it back. And actually, the conflict debt metaphor goes a little further because of course, as a financial advisor, if you are getting more and more and more conflict debt with a client, at some point you destroy your credit rating.
Right?
They just don't trust you anymore. Right. Your word is not worth anything and then you're screwed.
Right.
So it's really important. So yeah, this high frequency, but low impact conflict. And let's use that. I was working at a large telecommunications organization in Canada. Mm-hmm. We'll just leave it at that. There
that
aren't that many
of them.
Yeah.
One of our many oligopolistic industries.
Exactly. So talking about it, and I start talking about conflict. And one of the executives who has two commas in his paycheck puts up his hand and is like, would it be okay if we not use the word conflict, Leanne? Oh, and I was like, look, you can use whatever word you want, but let me just say, if you can't even say it, there's no chance you're going to be able to do it. So let's just start there.
Right.
But we really do get, even at the executive table of multi-billion-dollar corporations, I get people who can't say the word conflict.
Right. What is your take? This is totally off script.
Good.
What is your take on, you know how there's a lot of people who will say that a whole generation of people have been raised to prevent them from being exposed to conflict. Everyone gets their chance to be citizen of the month, blah, blah, blah. And when they graduate from school and they go into the real world, they would say that, well, they're going to be completely unprepared because the real world has a lot of conflict. At the same time, I would argue that there's a lot of people in that generation who are generating a lot of conflict by challenging sort of certain societal norms that should be challenged. And if it wasn't for them and that conflict that they're raising, we wouldn't be having a lot of the conversations we have about what's right, what's wrong today, and difference in today's social mores. Do you have any sort of research or anything on, I don't even know if it's millennials. I mean, maybe it's Gen Z.
Yes, it's after millennials.
It's Gen Z, right?
It's both.
Yeah.
So do I have research? No, but I have two of them in my house.
Ah, well, there you go.
Many of their friends.
Ethnographic research.
Yeah. And I'm on the board of a children's mental health charity. So mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time talking about this. So actually in The Good Fight, I wrote 9 chapters about having conflict at work. And then I couldn't leave it without doing the bonus chapter. The bonus chapter is called Try This at Home. It's the opposite of those crazy car commercials where it says, don't try this at home.
Right.
It is Try This at Home. And I address this issue specifically. So I think the kids that you're talking about when you say we've got really courageous kids willing to change the world, like the Parkland kids and things like that.
Perfect example.
Yeah. They only stick out because they're so rare.
Okay.
You know, they're obvious. And they're awesome and we need more of them. The vast majority of these kids have no conflict resilience whatsoever. Parents, and I do rant about this in the book because you shouldn't have got me onto this topic.
No, this is great.
Okay,
this
so
is the good
it makes
stuff.
Me nuts. So we don't want our precious little darlings to ever be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the Won't You Be My Neighbor, Mr. Rogers documentary on the plane on the way home from Austin on Monday. And I loved it, and I loved Mr. Rogers, but you do see in Mr. Rogers the start of this, which, and I'm going to use a different example because I like Mr. Rogers. I'm going to use early seasons American Idol, Paula Abdul.
Okay.
Oh, you're the U.S. you could ever be. And so I always say, our kids are raised by Paula Abdul, and then they go work for Simon Cowell. I have heard better stuff on a cruise ship, you know, in right. the Maldives than what you just put on that stage. So I think what happened was we started thinking about self-esteem, and we thought the most important thing we could do as parents was give our kids self-esteem, which is true, but we thought we could give them self-esteem by jumping in front of the bullets for them.
Right.
And making sure that their playgrounds don't have anything sharp in them, and making sure, right? Like bubble wrapping these kids. And of course, that means that it isn't true self-esteem. Self-esteem comes from risking and trying and falling and getting back up and learning what you can do. And so now we've got these kids who have this false sense of esteem. Their parents have left them in this bubble believing that they're perfect. And then they get their first job, right? And when they learn they're not perfect, first of all, I have been a manager for several of these people who 3 months in are phoning me saying, I think I need to look for something else. I'm like, 3 months, dude, like it's going to be a really long 45-year career if you go 3 months at a time, right?
Now, I've heard some stories. Now, yeah. I have one that is straight from someone who was in the room.
Okay.
Of you know, team meeting in a boardroom, they're sort of strategizing for the next quarter, and they said to a new hire, straight out of university, "You're going to have to work out of the downtown office starting on Monday." And without skipping a beat, they just said, "No, can't do that. My mom won't pick me up from work if I'm working downtown." And everyone was just like, "Did this just happen? Is this a joke?" Like, it was hard to process. So that I've heard firsthand, but I've heard other things. I want to know if you've heard these things too.
Yep.
Parents sitting in on job interviews.
Yep. Definitely heard that one.
I've even heard of parents sitting in on performance reviews once their kid has actually gotten the job.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You hear a lot about supply chains these days, because if the past couple years have taught us anything, it's that an efficient, well-managed supply chain is absolutely critical to keeping businesses successful and consumers happy. I'm Will Haywood, and I host a podcast called All Business, No Boundaries, where we talk about supply chains, how they work, what happens when they don't, and the innovations that are redefining what's possible in the world of logistics. Join me for insightful interviews with thought leaders and industry experts. We discuss how optimizing supply chains can break down the barriers that are holding businesses back. That's All Business, No Boundaries by DHL Supply Chain. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So let's just enjoy how many conflict avoidant people there are in that situation. Like, who is this boss that lets the parent barrel into the room without saying, I'm sorry, this is a place of work.
Right.
You are not permitted in the performance review. But I think some of it's just such shock and awe of like, a WTF, like what? And what? And I think some of these parents, it's like, they just, and it's like, I'll tell you a funny story. My mom was an executive as a woman in an insurance company in 1960.
Oh, wow.
Like the only female executive in the, right? And so then she gave it all up to be my brother and my mother and took all of that and applied it to being a mother. So I always refer to her as my CMO, my chief mothering officer, because she really is a chief mothering officer. And so you take these women who the only place that they will really do conflict is if you go near their young, like if you threaten their young.
Sure.
So I think these women are barreling into performance reviews. But it's this extension of never allowing their kid to stand on their own 2 feet or be uncomfortable.
Right.
But, you know, even on the one of my mom won't pick me up from downtown, it's like, well, you'll have to have her pack your lunch and take the subway, right? We are so conflict avoidant, we don't even know how to deal with that, which is just a simple and calm, you know, that's where the job is. If you'd like the job, that's where you'll need to be, period. And we don't need to get fussed about it. And we don't need to yell and scream or be incivil.
Right.
We just need to say, the job is downtown. If you'd like to be employed with us, that's where you'll be.
So let's give some takeaways for the listeners. So what are some techniques that you could recommend that people could try, either meeting with someone that they have a business relationship with or a personal relationship, to have conflict that is good?
Yeah. So the number one tip in every domain, so with your financial advisor, with your spouse as you're figuring out money or anything else, the number one technique is to validate the other person before trying to get your point in. And we get this one wrong all the time. We invalidate one another. I had a funny story with my 16-year-old who came home from school proclaiming that she hates her teacher. And I'm trying to raise a decent human being. And so I immediately responded with, "You don't hate your teacher."
Right.
Completely invalidating. And what we do when we invalidate someone is we make their emotions stronger. We make them dig in more.
Right.
So if the advisor's saying, look, you're not focusing on this enough. You're not going to get to where you need to get to by, you know, you told me you want 60 as a target. We're not going to get there if you keep, you know, pulling back at these levels. What you want to do is give your excuse. Well, I really want to take a bunch of vacations with my kid, right? And what we're doing is we're then putting in our own perspective. It's the wrong approach.
Okay.
It's what leads to the tug of war.
Right.
Right? Where you get into the like Miller Lite debate of tastes great, less filling, right? It's just going to go back and forth. So what's really important to do in that case is say, okay, I hear you. I'm not going to get where I need to get by 60 at this rate. And that's all you need to do, right? You just simply reflect back to them what they said. Mm-hmm. Because then what they're going to think is, wow, she's really smart. Because you've just said what they said. That's how humans are really flawed. And when somebody says what we've said, we're like, oh, they're, wow, so smart. Yeah, right. I like them.
You're brilliant.
Yeah. So, and then, if you want to go one notch further with your advisor, where it's a client relationship, you don't have to kiss their ass as much. But if you were with somebody at work or with somebody you love or whatever else, you might want to go one step further, which is to, after you validate them, ask one question to say you're genuinely interested in understanding their perspective. So in the financial advisor example, you would simply go, what would it take? What would it look like to be at that point we had talked about by 60? What would it take? And by showing that you're curious, that you're interested, that you value their perspective, you'll actually short circuit all of that amygdala hijack that happens in the brain. And you'll go straight to, oh, this is just a problem that we need to solve together as allies. That's the frontal lobe of the brain. That's the human, rational, good version of the brain, not the, are you fucking kidding me, animal brain.
Right.
So number one tip in any domain, when somebody says something you don't like, instead of refuting them, contradicting them, trumping them. I'm really glad that Donald Trump has the name Trump, because it's made trumping them, you know, not just a bridge metaphor
right,
anymore.
It's got a lot more gravitas now.
Yeah, I sound way less like a, you know, crazy old lady when I say trumping them. It's not a card metaphor now. Now we know what it means. So those are things you want to do. Instead of that, bite your tongue, validate them by reflecting back something that they said. And if you can't even reflect back what they said, just say something like, you know, if a colleague says something that's really challenging, just say, wow, you know, took a lot of guts to say that. Just say something that reflects the fact that, okay, I hear you. Mm-hmm. And then second step, ask a great question. Once you do that, the rule of reciprocity that the human brain works on means that when you say, okay, so thank you, Ms. Financial Advisor, let me now tell you kind of what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about things that are way sooner than 60. I'm thinking about, you know, I got one more year with my kid and, you know, I'm going to prioritize this short-term goal for the moment. And then what would it look like if I then beefed up above our targets after that? So if you've listened to them and validated them and been curious about them first, they will naturally return the favor when you start to share your perspective. So that's the number one tip for conflict in any domain. Validate and then show curiosity, and then you can add your two cents. And it will just feel like a conversation and problem solving instead of feeling like a fight.
That is really great advice. Like as you were explaining that, I was like, thinking through situations, my head's like, yeah, I would totally resonate with the way that you responded.
Yeah.
As opposed to my sort of default, which is like, pardon my French, but you're an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is what we want to do. Or, you know, your partner walks through the door and says, you know, I had the worst day. And your response is, oh, you think your day was bad. Wait till you hear about my day. And then dinner is not going to be fun.
Right.
Right. And nothing after is going to be fun either.
Right.
So it's really, really a useful technique.
So last question for you. So let's say that I've tried this. And what happens if the person you are having conflict with responds poorly to conflict? Because maybe they haven't read your book,
yep.
right? Or listened yep. to this podcast.
Well, obvious answer is buy them a copy of The Good Fight, Pete.
Right. Yeah.
No, kidding.
Of course.
Sorry, that was shameless.
That's okay. That's okay.
Okay. Okay, so somebody responds badly. So I think the first thing that's a problem is that we have something we call responding badly. So let's rock people's world for a minute
Okay. And
teach them that we have new fMRI data that shows us that most of us experience emotional pain the same way we experience physical pain.
Okay.
So now what you have to imagine is you walk into a meeting at work, and when you criticize somebody's presentation, you've essentially walked in the room, bit their arm, and walked out. Now, if you walked into a meeting room, bit someone, and walked out, would you imagine that they might get angry, get frustrated, get upset? Would that be normal kind of reactions?
Probably call HR.
Exactly. For sure. So I think we miss that it is a normal human reaction to sometimes get angry, to sometimes cry, to be frustrated. Sometimes I had somebody recently tell me she gave some feedback to a person that was constructive feedback, and the person got up and left. And I said, well, if you'd walked in, bit her, would it be weird if she got up and left? And she said, no. I said, well, that's how her brain is interpreting it. And kooky, kooky, crazy finding that might be useful to your listeners. Turns out that if you take a Tylenol 30 minutes before an emotionally unpleasant event, you experience it less negatively. So it's even the same brain mechanism. Now, just a note to your listeners, aspirin and Advil don't work. Those are anti-inflammatories. Mm-hmm. It's not the same mechanism. But if you're going to break up with your girlfriend, a little Tylenol slipped in the water so 30 minutes before.
You need the acetaminophen.
You need acetaminophen.
Right.
It actually acts on the neuro mechanisms of pain. So I first want to say, we got to get over these judgments about who's responding badly or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just need to take it as they responded by getting angry. Okay, so that tells me something in what I said hit a nerve.
Right.
Something important is going on here. Or they cried. They're probably frustrated. If women cry in the workplace, men think it's because they're weak. No, it's because they think you're a fucking asshole and they're so infuriated that you can't figure it out. That's just a little cheat sheet note.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Oh, God. The only time I've ever been on CNN Money in my career was for something I did on crying in the workplace. Awesome. I'm now like Dr. Crybaby.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Nice.
So just take the reaction as what it is and then go with that. So if somebody gets angry, say, okay, this is important. I've missed something. What did I miss? Just say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the brain works, we have mirror neurons, and mirror neurons exist only to pick up the emotional state of people that we are nearby. So if somebody's getting really angry, your body's going to start to pick up that anger. So you want to sort of be aware of that. And if you respond back saying your anger's okay, it isn't responding badly, it's okay, it's normal, then you can just say, I missed something. This is important. Tell me more. Tell me what's going on. So the most important thing you can do in any relationship, at work, at home, anywhere, is to remember that we're human. You're interacting with a human for the most part till chatbots take over the world.
Right.
And if you, instead of saying that a response is appropriate or inappropriate, if you just say it is and then try and understand what's beneath it, you will be phoning to thank me that all of a sudden there's so much less conflict in your life. Because if your response to someone who's angry is, okay, I get why things at work are pretty high stakes and why you were really invested in this and that it might have made you angry when I told you it didn't hit the mark, all of a sudden they will be so grateful to you. The level of trust will go up. The whole thing will be a virtuous cycle. And so that's the cool thing about the good fight. By being willing to have more high frequency, low impact conflict, you'll end up having a hell of a lot less conflict.
So really the moral of the story is it's okay to bite your financial advisor.
Yes, go ahead. Bite away. Tylenol 30 minutes beforehand for both the physical and emotional scarring, but absolutely.
That is so cool. Leanne, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insights. Everyone at the end of the show gets the floor for a minute, 2 minutes to give themselves a commercial. You can shamelessly plug anything that you like. So yeah. The floor is yours.
Yeah, awesome. So I guess what I really want is for folks to order The Good Fight. So everywhere fine books are sold, as they say. Mm-hmm. So The Good Fight, and then check out the website and some of the tools and ways that that I can support you. There's a bunch of free tools for people who get the book. So probably spelling my name would be useful because I have double hard to spell names. So it's LianeDavey.com. I know growing up with two hard to spell names is a pain in the butt, but,
wait a second. You're complaining to me about a hard to spell name.
I know. Well, come on, Preet. Like how much easier could it be?
You would be surprised.
Yeah, I know. People and baristas are quite impressive. It's true. So I would love if people would, check out LianeDavey.com. What I really love, of course, is hearing their stories and their questions. So, you know, send in an email, tell me the scenario you're struggling with. I often write blogs that are just responses to people's juicy questions.
Oh yeah.
So that's what I love.
Let me tell you who I bit this week.
Yeah, if you do bite your financial advisor, let me know how it goes. Please don't mention my name. That's what I would really, really love. I love to hear people's stories of how conflict made their lives better instead of the opposite.
Very good. All right. So the website is LianeDavey.com. The book is The Good Fight. You can order it like pre-release now, right?
Yes, it's available for pre-order. And if you manage to get in before it comes out, there's amazing free tools that everybody's getting. So we had to have a few little goodies for the pre-order people. We live in an Amazon world, so pre-orders mean the world to an author.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Pre-order, it would be great.
Wonderful. Thank you again for being on the show. That's it for this episode, everybody. If you enjoyed this episode or any other episodes, as always, here's your reminder to leave a rating on iTunes. And if you want to leave a comment, I do read them all, and I would very much appreciate you doing either of those things. And that's it for this week. We will see you next time.